come to the 64th annual OA birthday party. Together we get better. In person, January 12th to 14th at the LAX Hilton in Los Angeles, California. Meet fellows from across the globe for a weekend-long extravaganza of workshops, panels, special interest speakers, food, entertainment, fellowship, laughs, and recovery. Highlights include body image workshop, big book study, sober eating workshop, keynote speakers with unique stories covering all aspects of eating disorders, dance party and comedy show, yoga and meditation, meetings and meetups for LGBTQIA, BIPOC, Spanish language, young people, and AAPI members, boutique, shop till you drop, and much more. Registration is now open at oabirthday.com. Staying the night, book your room now at a discounted rate through oabirthday.com website. Act fast, rooms sell out quickly. Why? There is a solution. You will hear from speakers who have various versions of this disease and who live happy, joyous, and free. Because together we get better.
I can actually see you guys. Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi,
everybody. Great to see you all. I want to start sort of, instead of what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, because I'm a little rebel, I guess. Because for right now, I am grateful that I made it early. You know, I made it on time. That was not my old MO before I came in 28 and a half years ago. I am grateful that I was driving behind someone who was going 15 miles below the speed limit because they probably kept me safer driving in the rain. I am grateful that the rain let up so I could walk here and not be like, you know, completely rained on going up the stairs. I am grateful that I get to talk to all of you. I'm grateful that I got over the fact that I'm being taped because that makes me uncomfortable. Because I'm here to be of service to the newcomer, and that's my job. And if there's a newcomer listening, if you don't get anything out of this, just keep going to other meetings, keep listening to other tape, podcasts, whatever they are. This is just my experience, strength, and hope. So last night, I went to a party. I went to a dinner party, and it was wonderful. It was so much fun that by the end of the night, I had a stomach ache from laughing, not from eating too much. That is also not my MO 28 and a half years ago. My MO back then was, I go, I eat until I'm comfortable, then I hang out with people. I walk in and I eat, right? And I didn't realize it until after I got abstinent that when I went to a party, other people would drink until they're comfortable. That was not my ism. But, you know, there would be 20 minutes of, like, drinking or eating until comfort. And then people would be comfortable to hang out. And I was like, oh, all I have to do is just get through the 20 minutes of being uncomfortable. With or without the food, it's still going to be that amount of time. So I get to go to this. I went to this last night. I, you know, didn't eat for the first 20 minutes. I didn't do anything to, you know, numb out or get to a point. I got to do it naturally because of this program. And then I got to be present because I wasn't spending the rest of the time going, I can't believe how much I ate. Do you think anybody noticed how much I ate? I should eat more because it's still there. They're eating it. How come they get to eat it? Why don't I get to eat it? I wonder if I can take it home. Like just chatter. I really hope nobody at the party is listening to this because I want to share that the food wasn't particularly good. Like, it was fine, but by the time we sat down, because I was patient and not first, it was kind of a buffet style, and I was, you know, I waited. It was all cold, and I was like, I can't really throw this in the microwave because there's salad there now, so it doesn't work. So I'm just like, meh. It doesn't matter. It's not about the food, even though he's a good cook. And it would have been good if it was hot. But it was like, he was a very good cook, if you're listening. But it was about the gathering. And I ate plenty. I was fine. I was fully taken care of. And it wasn't about that. And that's always what it used to be about. I used to joke that, like, if an event had cake, I would go. Like, I didn't go to celebrate someone's birthday. I went to celebrate their cake. So it was just really, and there were a bunch of desserts, and they weren't for me. Like, there was, I can eat dessert. Like, my abstinence is, you know, everything in moderation, and I had some, but I didn't have all five. I had one. And I would have, again, 28 whatever years ago, had to try all five. Had to. They were there. I had to. And it's in program that I'm like, you know what, honey, if you want something, you can go buy it another time. That's just, you know, I love free food, and I love free treats. I'm also grateful that there is something in my house that someone gave me as a gift that I would have eaten by now, that is sitting there unopened, and I will bring it to the next event I go to, because it's not appealing to me right now. For today, I would also like to share that for me, the person who has the most abstinence is the person who got up the earliest. And that will never be me. I am never the person who got up the earliest. Not even today. And so I need to stay humble and teachable in this program. Okay, so now going back. When I first came in, back before that, I believe I was born a compulsive overeater. I was born a compulsive overeater. The way I behaved initially was restricting. I didn't know it was restricting. I just hated all food, unless it was sweet. And I got bribed to eat with the foods that I liked. But generally speaking, I ate like the same thing every day because I just wouldn't try anything else. I just hated everything. I hated spicy food. I was not an adventurous eater at all. And I was real little. And then I hit puberty, and we moved a lot, and we had moved again, and I was very uncomfortable, and food was love. Food was comfort. That was the way it worked in my family. We didn't traffic in emotions. We trafficked in comfort food and or other comfort behaviors. And so I was very lonely at this, you know, in this new environment. I was very unhappy, and food was comfort. My mom used to hide food in my room for me. It was our little secret between us because we both, God bless her, she had this situation, this ism as well. And she was a binger, she was a restrictor, and she was a compulsive eater, and very, very restrictive a lot of the time. And we had similar ways we would act out. And so, I came in and thought and like knew enough at the beginning to be like, wait, I'm angry that this happened and that this is what I learned. And over the years realized that's what she knew to do. And that's what I knew to do. And like, maybe it really helped me. Maybe it really helped me get through those years. Maybe I would have turned to much harder drugs. Who knows what would have happened? That was my path. And it stopped working. And when it stopped working, I kept doing it. As an adult, I would skip meals, because it was also very important that we looked okay in my family. Whether or not we felt okay was a whole different matter. It was like, I joke that, and sorry for the people who've heard me 1,000 times, but I joke that, like, we were allowed to feel fine and nothing. And anything else was, not okay. You don't want the neighbors to hear. Like, and yet they would fight all the time. It was a very tense household. So, the idea of feeling anything else was just very confusing to me. I had no idea what emotions were like. When I finally came in, I would skip meals. I would binge late at night. I would say I wouldn't do it again. And then I would binge again. Not every single day, but enough that I got to the point of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization that they talk about in the Big Book. And that went on and on until I was in therapy for over a year. I never mentioned it to her. It was everything else that I, you know, talked to her about. About a year and a half in, my niece got diagnosed with anorexia. And I was like, it's so weird. You know, my entire family does weird stuff with food. and I couldn't stop eating last night. Anyway, you know, it was like that. It was like, so anyway, about this guy. And she's like, you know, like, back it up. And she was like, I was like, I think it would make sense for you to try OA. She was my Eskimo. She was in another program. And I was like, and all I thought was she's telling me there's something wrong with the way I look. Not my brain, which was, there was lots wrong with my brain. But so she was just like, just try it. Go to 6 meetings. I went to the first one. I thought everybody was insane. God bless you all. But you were feeling emotions and you were expressing them in front of me. And I thought, who does that? Like, what kind of maniacs, like, cry in front of strangers as opposed to the maniac, you know, who was just like, I'm never going to show an emotion to anybody ever. And then at the second meeting, I heard my diary being read. And I was like, I'm in the right place. And so by 6, I was like totally hooked. And I very luckily got someone who offered to be my temporary sponsor. I would have never picked her. I would have never picked anybody because I would have never picked a human being because human beings aren't perfect, y'all. And I'm like, this is the problem. The problem is I'm not perfect. And the problem is if I get someone who's human, they're not perfect. Like, I didn't think this through, like, consciously, but that was subconscious. And she also wasn't, she didn't have my issues. She was, she had been a 20-time-a-day bulimic. And she was fantastic. She was my sponsor for 10 years. She was a big book thumper. And it was always like, we do not just chat. I call, she's like, okay, what step is that? You know, whatever the issue is, what step is that? Go work the step. She got me through the steps relatively quickly. I really, really subscribe to that. You're going to do them again. At least I did. And again, and again, and much better. And also I love, you know, and it says in the, how it works, like we, you know, we're fearless, be fearless and thorough from the very start. I wasn't, bless you. I wasn't fearless and thorough. I was totally fearful and totally patchwork. And it still worked for me because it was all I was capable of. As someone who was not in touch with my emotions, as someone who wasn't in touch with, like, anything present. I mean, when I was driving somewhere, I would be, like, coming up with the excuse of why I was late, even if I wasn't late, like, because I probably was going to be late, but just in case. Like, that, my brain always had to be somewhere else. So to be present and to be working the steps and to be, you know, trying it to the best of my ability was not fearless and thorough. The first time around, it was just it was just the best I could do. So maybe that was, you know, for that person at that time, fearless and thorough. But it got way deeper as I went through the steps again and again. Not to scare anyone from doing it, but so I recommend getting a sponsor. It doesn't really matter who. I mean, someone that you can trust, certainly. I believe the first 3 steps can be done with, like, anyone, probably an AI at this point. ChatGPT at this point. I probably should be mentioning names. But the 4th step, you need someone. I need someone I trust. And I also strongly recommend getting through them. Because I joke that I can always tell when someone's on their 4th step, like sitting in their 4th step, because it's like you can see the aura in a meeting when they haven't gotten through it yet, when they're just sitting there for months and months. It's painful. Get through it. Ugh. Like, and it doesn't have to be perfect. This is just me. And my abstinence started out as, I had to start eating breakfast, which I hated, and because it was such an easy meal to skip. And I had to start eating meals at meal times, at normal meal times, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, not to binge, not to eat after 10 p.m. That was just for me to, you know, that was something I would do. Eat at 10 after 10, binge in front of the TV. And man, was that hard. I used all sorts of tricks to get myself not to do it, you know, and I recommend any trick that works. I know we're supposed to be honest, but I'm like, if I have to get to a meeting, especially early on, now I'll tell anybody, but if I was like, I had to get to a meeting and I was with people, I would lie to get to that meeting. I would, anything I need to do to get to my, as long as I'm not hurting anyone, to work my program is okay for me to do. So, I wouldn't eat late at night in front of the TV. And sometimes it would get to the point where I'd be like, I'm white knuckling right now for those who can't see. I can have all of this at breakfast time. I can have anything I want at breakfast. I just can't have it right now. And the thing is, I never wanted it at breakfast because I barely wanted to eat at breakfast. But that was what would get me through. Or if I was working, at the time I was working in a place that had lots of bowls of delicious things that I always wanted. And my thing was like, I wanted to be eating consciously. And it was really easy to just not be conscious when that stuff is all around. And I was the receptionist, so it was like, and I was responsible for refilling them too. And that was, the fox with the hen house. But I could have anything I wanted if I called my sponsor and went across the street to the convenience store and bought it. That's it. And that cleaned up my food so much. And also, like, the fact that I was being honest with her. I was 31 when I came in. It was like I was ready to come in. I was ready to start being honest with another human being about my food. I hadn't been up until that point. But it was sort of like therapy. It's like, if I'm going to go, why lie? So it was like, if I'm going to do this work, why lie? So I was honest with her. And it cleaned up. My food cleaned up. It wasn't perfect. I might have had stretches of what could be conceived as perfect, but it's not perfect, but it's clean. It's like a way to get through my day without using food to numb out or to feel better or to whatever. And I remember one event I went to, and they had like my favorite food item. And so I would take a bite and then be like, ah, and throw it out. And then like it would go by again and I'd take one and take a bite and I'd be like, ah, and I'd throw it out. And I must have done that like 8 or 9 times. And I called her and I was like, I did this. And she's like, all right. And I was like, wait, why aren't you berating me or telling me, and she was just like, it's a slip. It's all right. And I was like, I was waiting for the, like, you're bad. You're wrong. You've done it wrong. I drop you, or you have to start over, or whatever. And instead, it was just so gentle, and it was like, and I heard this, we're gonna love you until you love yourself, and also like learning how to be gentle from another human being, around this and around everything. Like it extrapolated from there, like it was news to me. And then my sponsor now, who I've had for like 18 years, I remember starting to work with her, and this was already 10 years in, and we were talking, I guess I was doing a 4-step again, and she was just like, or turning over a 10th step, and my part, and she was like, well, what about anger? And I was like, anger? I don't have anger. And she's like, like she didn't stop laughing for like, she's like, yeah, you do. And I was like, what? And it took me that many years and someone telling me, like, you're angry. And I was like, oh, huh. And so I got to work on that. One of my favorite things I've ever heard in meetings, like, when you bury emotions, you bury them alive. And, like, so when they start, when I'm not burying them with food anymore, whew, those emotions, it's like a little volcano sometimes. And what I know from program is if I let them exist, they will pass. If I try to stuff them down with food, they'll come back again. I'm just kicking it down the road. So working the steps, the way I work the steps daily is I get up, I say the serenity prayer, the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer. And in the middle of the seventh step prayer, I say what I want removed. Like, please take my fear and replace it with faith. Please remove my anger and replace it with peace. My hatred, replace it with love. Whatever it is. Whatever's up. Pride, humility, intolerance, tolerance, all of that. And then I also do something I heard from a sponsee that I loved, that she got from a meeting, which was, God, let me be a blessing. Let me be a beacon of light. And then during the day, like on the way here, I was like, help. That's my favorite prayer. That's a shorty. Or if you want to make it 3 times longer, God, help me. And just because I wanted to be of service here, and I didn't know if I'd have anything to say because I was tired. Like, when I have to get up early for something, I wake up hours earlier because I'm like, the alarm's not going to go off. I'm an anxious creature. That's something else. That's the one thing I miss about binging, is that I used to be so much mellower, and now I'm so freaking high strung. But what are you going to do? Other than lots of emotional work. So I was like, God help me. You know, either I'm going to be of service or I'm not, but at least I got up and I got out, and it's getting look at that. It's beautiful out. I'm grateful I can go for a walk in a different neighborhood. That's another thing. I came in never voluntarily, and that's five, never voluntarily exercising. It was always a chore that I thought I had to do in order to maintain a certain weight. And I went to the gym and I got on the bike, and I biked for a half hour, and I hated it. And I read while I did it, so it wasn't that bad. But then I let myself be open to other things. I love riding my bike now in the world, not on the treadmill or not on the thingy, the stationary bike. I love hiking. It's crazy. I love walking. I walk, and all of this is for my mental health. It's very little for my physical. I mean, I'm sure it's very good for me to walk every day, but it's because it makes me feel better. It makes me calmer. It helps with all that crazy anxiety. I love swimming. That came out of a car accident that I had. Someone hit and ran me. I don't know how. But I was open and teachable, and therapist said you should start swimming, and I did, and I never liked it. And I'm like, I love this. All these things that I learned to love as an adult that I never really liked doing as a kid, and I'm so grateful for that. That I can use, and I don't have to be good at any of it. That was the other thing. If I wasn't good at something, I didn't do it. And I don't let that stop me today. And that's a huge change in my life. And then back to what I do during the day, I end the day with a gratitude list that I say aloud. And I God, thank you for the abundance in my life. And I list 10 things I'm grateful for. And I try not to be, the same things, the same 10 things. But it could be anything. It's I'm grateful I don't have any leaks in my roof. I'm in an apartment on the top floor. That's lucky. I'm lucky. I have not, what else? Oh, I could talk about God, but I think that'll take longer than 3 minutes or however much I have left. But I didn't believe in God when I came in. I believed in kind of this mean fairy tale God that I would pray to and not get what I wanted. And that didn't work. And so coming in and learning about that a higher power can be whatever I imagine it to be, whatever works for me, whatever I can conceive, and it can change. The concept can change over the years, and it has. To me, it's everything and everyone that makes up the world, the universe. That's my higher power. And that energy or flow or whatever it is, I can go with it or I can go against it. And it's like in a river. If I go with the river, it's a lot easier. I'm very lazy. I like easy. If I go against it, I'm going to get worn out and drown. So, which makes sense? It's not always clear every day which would be the best choice. But, when I am present, when I can stop for a moment, I do know which feels better. And it's I was talking about this to someone recently. It's like when that voice, when the voice inside me is really anxious and uptight and loud, that's not my higher power. The voice inside me that's calm and quiet and thoughtful, that's my higher power. And again, I don't always listen to the right voice, but I do my best, or to the voice that will lead me to peace. But that's my goal, is peace. And I think that must be my time by now.
1 minute.
1 minute? Okay. Thank you for letting me share. Oh, we keep... This is the time for questions only. There's no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leaders are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. Please remember, if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast.
Thank you. I noticed that you say ism and this thing, is there a conscious not saying like disease and addiction?
No, it was just because I was mentioning that other people drink and I didn't, you know, I didn't want to go deep into other whatever. No, sorry. If it was. Do I consciously say ism instead of disease or? Yeah, so.
Hi. Could you talk a little bit about sponsoring, about like how you sponsor, being sponsored, anything?
Sure.
Sponsoring?
I really took my cue from my sponsor, particularly my first sponsor, who was very much like, I'm not your buddy, I'm not your mom, I'm not your therapist, I'm your guide through the steps and the traditions and the tools. Like, and the question was how do I go about sponsoring and how am I sponsored? So that's what I do with my sponsees. Like, and she also, like, we're not talking for a half hour. If I call, it's, you know, we're done in 5 or 10 minutes. So that's the way I work with my sponsees, and I have 3 sponsees in this program and 3 in another program. And so, you know, if I did give an hour to each or however much time to each, it would be, I needed to have boundaries too. So we focus. And I think for me that worked, the focus. And over the years I've had sponsees who liked that and those who didn't. And so they can, you know, they can let me go with love and that's fine. And that's the thing too, is not taking it personally. I remember at first when I started, and my sponsor was like, as soon as I was through the 5th step, she was like, okay, time to sponsor. She got me, as long as I was ahead of the person in terms of steps, I was ready to sponsor. She got me to work. She got me doing service almost immediately. She's like, you can be a newcomer contact. And I'm like, but I'm a newcomer. She's like, you got more days than they do, you know. And I strongly recommend that, taking service positions. Sponsoring... I would take it personally if they disappeared, if they stopped doing the work. And now I'm like, whatever. It's, you know, you've got your path, I've got mine. And if I've got people who don't want to do the step work, like if they never do the step work, I'm like, I don't know how I'm useful to you because that's my job. If there are people who are just dragging their feet, like it's hard, you know, you can kind of tell. That then I, you know, I try to be patient. But after a while, it's like, this is not useful to you. I am not being useful to you. So, you know, we need to figure something out. Because it is about the steps. You know, it's that cliche of, like, if you want to feel better, go to a meeting. If you want to get better, work the steps. And I can be useful to someone else if I'm not, you know, if they don't want to do the work. I've had people who were like, they just wanted to have a sponsor, but they did not see the point of doing any of the work. And it's like, that's not my program. That's not how, that's to me. It could be for anyone else. And that's no judgment on anyone else. If they want to go to meetings, if they want to have a sponsor and not do any of the steps, that's fine. It's just not how I want to work with someone. Is that helpful? Okay, good.
Will you talk about your spiritual program and your concept of God?
Will I talk about my spiritual program and my concept of God? I mean, I think I did with the, you know, the flow of the universe kind of thing, like going with the river, going against the river. Was there any other aspect?
How did you come to it?
Okay, let's see. Well, when I first came in, how did I come to it? I'm not good at this. When I first came in, the room was my higher power because it was an hour of, like, I'm being honest with other people for the first time. And there was an honesty I was hearing that it transcended just the room. It felt very holy to me, or sacred to me. I don't know what it is exactly. And then from there, I was working at a job down near the beach in Santa Monica. And so at lunchtime, I would go down to the beach, and I would be like, that ocean is a power greater than myself, because I cannot control the waves. Like, as much as I want, I cannot. And so I started praying to the ocean. I started I was like an animist or something. I don't know what it is. I started praying to, at the ocean, at the mountains. Like, nature was my higher power, because it was a force greater than me. And then I think about a year and a half in, my brother got diagnosed with cancer, and then a year later he died. And during that period, I was very angry at God. And it was when I realized, like, a few things. One, that I believed in God because I was angry at God. Two, that I conceived of God as a person, kind of, that I could be angry at, which I was like, this is, why would God, that would be a terrible person. It would just, all these nice people have horrible suffering. And three, that I thought, I unconsciously thought, oh, if I'm really good in program, bad things won't happen to me. Like, why is this bad thing happening? Why am I losing this good, you know, this great person? Realizing, like, A, that's incredibly selfish and self-absorbed, and B, like, that's not how the world works. Like, if I'm good, you know? So, or if I'm not good enough, I'm going to be punished, or he's going to be punished. Like, none of it made any sense. So it really had to kind of, like, my concept of God a lot. And that's when it became, like, it's not someone keeping score on whether or not we're good people. It's a force in the universe. And shit happens, man. Bad stuff. And so there were nights when I was just crying and crying, and I did not think I would ever stop crying. And I did, and I would, you know, fall asleep and wake up the next day, and I was like, that was God, because I could not have gotten through that night by myself. It was, something else was helping me. So it's the great mystery. As I heard someone else say, if it wasn't a great mystery, like, if it was just a little mystery and I could solve it, I'd be like, well, now what? You know, it has to be a great mystery. It has to be something that I'm like, I have no idea, because that's the only thing that'll keep me humble, you know? So, yeah, that's that.
Mm-hmm. If you could talk to that younger self, what would you tell them? What are some of the biggest advice
that you've
had
in program?
Good question.
If you could talk to your younger self when you came in at 31, what would you say? What would you tell them?
Yeah.
What were the big surprises about program? There's one item I haven't eaten since I came in. It was the item that used to get hidden in my room. It was something I'd eaten a billion of, very conservative estimate. And I decided, like, you know, I've used the privilege. I don't need to. And there have been variations on this product. There have been like a dozen variations, and I'm like, are you kidding me? And I'm not. And the thing is, I can, if I call my sponsor and say I'm going to go buy it, I can still get it. And for whatever reason, I haven't done that one day at a time. When I first came in and learned the concept of abstinence, I was like, I can't do this. I will not be able to put this down for the rest of my life. And my sponsor said, can you do it just for today? And I was like, fine. And I did it for that day for 28 and a half years. It's shocking to me. And if I had told that person, she would have been like, bye-bye, I'm not doing this. Also that I believe in a higher power. Also that I pray every day. She would have left. She would have walked out. That I will tell anybody and everybody about my program. I wouldn't admit I was a newcomer when I first came in. It was super obvious I was a newcomer. I was like cross-talking right and left, but, and all the rest of it. But I didn't say, I never got a newcomership. I never, like, admitted it to anyone. So, yeah, everything's changed. So much has changed. Like, that I would just be honest. Most of the time, like, to the best of my ability is... and take responsibility for my actions and be accountable. That was not my MO either. So, yeah, a lot has changed. Thank you.
I like your method of calling your sponsor and then being able to buy it. The question I have, is there any other tools you have when you're surrounded by, I know that you like to snappily get work, which I'm sure can be challenging because you're surrounded by it. Do you have any other practices or tools to use to resist temptation?
Well, the tools. Do I have any tools that I use or practices to avoid temptation? The big thing I'm grateful for is I don't feel the temptation today, but I don't know if that's helpful at all because that sounds annoying to me. If I were new and someone said that to me, I'd be like, shut up. So I did whatever trick worked back then and today. During the holidays, I noticed that I was eating, this was years ago, I noticed I was like, holidays. And my abstinence is everything in moderation, except for that one item. And so even though when I came in, I cut down on sugar probably 90%, I still eat it. And so if there's desserts at holiday times, I really want them. And so I started I told my sponsor, is it okay if I call, or I asked her, is it okay if I call before I have dessert, just so it's conscious? She's like, sure. And I made it very clear I would not text, because texting is way too easy. If I'm at a party and I have to leave the room and call her and say I'm going to have dessert, she doesn't have to be there, but I have to call her and make that effort so that it's really conscious. That cut down my choices to eat dessert, because I was like, I don't want to have to call her every day. Although there are times that I called every day. And so I did it again this season, because I am grateful that I am still humble and teachable today. Not always. Sometimes I'm cocky, and that is never, it never works. But that I will be telling God and another human being what I'm doing with food today is really, really helpful. And it keeps me like, okay, I can be present by doing that. What else would I do? It's hard to remember back then. Oh, and the question, yeah, I said what the question was. Otherwise, it is the tools. I will call another person. Oh, the big thing for me is if for whatever reason I'm thinking about my food 20 minutes after I eat it, like in a way that's like, oh, should I have done that? Should I have not have done that? Was that slippery? Like, what? I call someone. I call my sponsor and probably someone else, and I'll probably share it at my next meeting too, because I don't want it to be secret. I did secret for 30 years or however many years I was in my disease. I don't want to be sneaky. I don't want to be creepy with food, like creeping in and eating it and like a little mouse and like getting away with it. So it's all about like, if I want to be an abstinent woman of dignity. Yeah. And if that means I have to be like, calling someone every 10 minutes, that's what I got to do.
Thank you.
Thank you. So do I turn this off now? Because we're done. Oh, I thought that was the 5 minutes. Okay. I have five more minutes of questions. Bring it.
Thank you so much for that, Lee. It's so good to see you. How, when you were like newly abstinent, did you work your program like through travel?
The question is, how did I work my program through travel early in my abstinence? Badly. I did it badly, and I still do it badly. It's so weird. When I go on trips, I have my little big book, my teeny little big book. It's so cute. And I don't touch it. I might read it on the plane. I had a really lovely, my sponsor, because I was always scared of flying, and she was like, put the big book in your hand and say, just like this book is in my hand, I'm in the hand of my higher power. And it was like, oh. Like, and then I also thought, oh, wait, the pilot wants to live too. Like, it was just this, Like, you know, like, so that would really come. And I also, like, I did make food for the plane so that I wasn't eating crap at the airport, stuff like that. But on trips, I generally would not get to meetings. And this was before all the Zoom availability and all that kind of stuff. But, and I generally wouldn't read much of, you know, after the first day. And it would be fine until I got back. And then I would get back and I would be like a freaking wreck. And my food would still be okay, but I would be a wreck. And I would be like, why am I a wreck? Oh, maybe it's because you didn't do anything to do with your program for 2 weeks. I still do the prayers in the morning and the gratitude list at night, but it's still something. And I've been, you know, it's been suggested that I write about it. And I write about it, and I still do it. And I don't know what that's about. It's much better than it was, because I will call my sponsor, quite often during the... Even I was on a trip overseas, and she was overseas at the same time, so we were in the same time zone, and we were both having challenges with our vacations. And so it was great, because I would call and, like, you know, be whiny, and she would be like, I get it. She wouldn't be like, okay, go work this step. She would be like, I get it, which is sometimes really nice. And then she'd say, go work this step. But, so yeah, I'm really crappy at it. If you have any suggestions, I would love to hear them. Thank you. Michael.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you. I'm curious about your brother. Is he still with us?
No, he died after a year. He died, yeah.
What gives me solace is, it's not in God's world, if it's not a happy ending, it hasn't ended yet. And I've had a lot of sickness and stuff in my child. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, now I accept God's world, but it's ended. How did you come to peace with your brother's?
The question was, how did I come to peace with my brother's death? That's a big one. I didn't. I know acceptance is not agreement. Like, accepting the world on the world's terms does not mean I agree with everything that's happening in the world. I think death is bullshit. I know it's, you know, there's all sorts of the theories of, like, how death is meant to make us appreciate life. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. Sorry for cursing. But I lost my best friend a year and a half ago. She had been my best friend since we were 13. It's a close circle, and we still are like, this is not acceptable. This is not okay. This will never be okay. It will never, one friend said, it's unfathomable. And it is. I cannot fathom my life without her. It has been terrible. At the same time, I know that as human beings, we can hold different things. We can hold several emotions. We can hold several concepts. And so I have joy in my life. My brother, it took years before I was out of that grief. And a lot of work. And with my best friend, it has been the same. It's been working on feeling my emotions. A lot of the time, I will just run away from them. So I actually make time to sit and feel the emotions. And just cry. What a great note to end on. But, you know, I do know that it will pass. It passes with different speeds for different people. And I happen to be, I think, one of the slower people. So thank you for letting me share.